Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Iran said Tuesday it conducted ballistic missile tests to defy U.S. sanctions and to show its power and ability to confront any threats. Mario Ritter has the report.
The tests came 2 months after the United States imposed new sanctions against Iranians and companies with links to Iran's missile program. Iranian state television reportedly showed a missile being fired from an underground silo at night. The announcer said it was a medium-range Qaim-1 missile, according to Reuters. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or IRGC, is the security force under Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei. On its official website, it said Tuesday's test was to show Iran's deterrent power and also the Islamic Republic's ability to confront any threat against the Islamic Revolution. General Amir Ali Hajizadeh is the head of the IRGC's space program. He said the missile struck a target 700 kilometers away. Last July, the U.S. and world powers reached an agreement with Iran on its nuclear activities. Iran agreed to remove most of its nuclear fuel and to avoid testing nuclear-capable missiles in exchange for the lifting of sanctions. After two Iranian missile tests last October, the U.S. announced new sanctions in January against Iranians and companies for helping Iran's ballistic missile program. The U.S. said the tests violated a UN resolution. The resolution banned Iran from any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launches using such ballistic missile technology. Iran has always denied any link between its missile program and the disputed nuclear activity. I'm Mario Ritter.
A human rights group has evidence of killing, rape, and disappearances committed by both sides in South Sudan's civil war. Jim Dressbeck has the details.
Human Rights Watch, an organization that monitors human rights, said serious violations have been committed by both Sudan's army and Sudanese rebels in the East African nation. The watch group visited Western Ektoria in February. At that time, witnesses reported that soldiers attacked homes. The military also stole property and displaced civilians, said eyewitnesses. Human Rights Watch has asked for the African Union to establish a court to try the most serious cases of violence. Human Rights Watch and other groups have called for an arms embargo on South Sudan. Tens of thousands of people have died in the past 2 years in South Sudan during the civil war. More than 2 million people have been displaced because of the violence. I'm Jim Dressbach.
A leading advocate for stopping the practice of female genital mutilation says the world needs to take urgent action to end it. Bruce Alpert has more.
FGM is a hugely harmful violation of a girl's rights. It causes major medical and psychological harm. We do not know how many girls have died from it, but many have. The comments come from Mary Wandia in a VOA interview. She is FGM program manager for Equality Now, which works to stop the practice. A United Nations report issued last month said 70 million more girls and women are victims of female genital mutilation than previously thought. It said at least 200 million girls and women in 30 nations have been mutilated. FGM is the cutting, sewing, or destruction of a female's genitals. It is practiced by various religions and cultures. It has been practiced for centuries. It causes severe pain and prolonged bleeding, infection, infertility, and even death, the UN report said. Broadcast reports show girls writhing in pain and shock. The mutilation is typically done without pain relief. By most who practice it, FGM is believed to control female sexuality and increase fertility. However, doctors have long disputed this view. Medical researchers in Sudan found that girls who went through the procedure were more likely to be infertile. Last September, the UN set a goal of ending the practice by 2030. Cultures in the Nile River Valley in Egypt and Sudan have practiced FGM, but it is more widespread. One reason for the higher numbers is that the UN reported numbers from Indonesia for the first time. Half of Indonesian girls aged 11 and younger have undergone the practice, according to the UN. Immigrants to other countries where FGM is not practiced often return their girls to their home country to have FGM. Wandia said the most success in stopping the practice is where governments have shown leadership. Wandia said Kenya reduced FGM rates for teenage girls to about 11%. By comparison, half of adult women have had FGM, she said. Liberia and Burkina Faso are also reducing FGM, Wandia said. But she said progress is offset by population growth. Wandia said some countries, notably Liberia, Mali, Sudan, and Sierra Leone, have not banned the practice. Countries such as Egypt and Indonesia must prevent doctors and other health workers from carrying it out, she said. In her interview with VOA, Wandia said it is time for the world to make sure that we finally get to grips with this extreme form of violence against girls. We cannot have any more excuses, she said. Somalia has the highest rate of female genital mutilation, the UN said. It affects 98% of the female population between the ages of 15 and 49. Guinea and Sierra Leone also have very high rates. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Next, John Russell brings us a story about the body of a 43-year-old woman found in an elevator in China.
CNN says a maintenance crew inspected a broken elevator in the Chinese city of Xi'an on January 30th. The elevator had stopped between the 10th and 11th floors. Workers shouted to see if anyone was inside and did not hear an answer. They turned off the power and left the building. Workers found the woman's body on March 1st, after they returned from the Lunar New Year holiday. The woman, who lived in the building, could have been in the elevator for up to 30 days. The woman's neighbors said that the woman lived alone. Local police arrested two suspects in their investigation. They said they were investigating the companies responsible for the elevator maintenance. Chinese web users posted angry responses on social media. They criticized relationships in modern Chinese society. One user of Weibo, a social media site similar to Twitter, said, "I thought such things would only take place in the wild. But actually, the crowded cities are nothing but just a forest of steel. We are surrounded by so many people and have so many good friends in online chat groups, but there are few that really have anything to do with you." Chinese media criticized negligence in China's elevator maintenance industry. Media also criticized property management companies. China has had problems with similar accidents in the past. Last July, a woman died after she fell through flooring in a Chinese department store.
A college student who survived the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013 has died in a car accident in Dubai. Here again is Mario Ritter.
Victoria McGrath was a student at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. The university said in a statement that McGrath and another student, Priscilla Perez Torres, were killed during the weekend. The two friends, both 23 years old, were on a personal trip to the Persian Gulf country in the Middle East. News reports say the driver and another passenger were also killed in the crash of a Ferrari sports car. The driver was identified as Canadian boxer Cody Nixon. The U.S. Embassy in Dubai declined to comment. McGrath survived the Boston Marathon bombing in April 2013. The terror attack killed three people and injured more than 200. She received injuries from shrapnel that struck her left leg when the first of two bombs exploded. McGrath and a firefighter, James Plourd, appear in an AP news agency photo from the attack area. Plourd said he and his family were devastated with the loss of our dearest friend, the CBS News website reported. McGrath's parents told AP that their daughter responded to the bombing with determination and humility. They say she worked with poor and disabled children. After the Boston Marathon bombings, she also worked with veterans, they said. Northeastern University President Joseph Aoun sent a statement to the university community about the accident. He called McGrath's and Torres's deaths a heartbreaking loss to their families, friends, and to all of us in the Northeastern family. He said McGrath was from Weston, Connecticut. Perez Torres came to the university from Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. McGrath was studying business at the university in Boston. I'm Mario Ritter.
Presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders say they welcome the possibility of opposing Donald Trump in the general election. Here again is Jim Dresbach.
Both candidates were asked during the debate Sunday in Flint, Michigan, how they expect to compete against Trump. Clinton addressed the question by saying she thinks that Donald Trump's bigotry, his bullying, his bluster are not going to wear well on the American people. Sanders, a senator from Vermont, told the CNN panel in the audience, "I think we can beat Trump. Our campaign is generating an enormous amount of excitement. I think we are exciting working class people, young people, who are prepared to stand up and demand that we have a government that represents all of us." The candidates also debated gun control, trade agreements, environment, and mental health. I'm Jim Dresbach.
The British royal family has released photos of Prince William and family on a ski vacation in the French Alps. Katie Weaver tells us more.
The pictures come from an agreement between the royals and photographers. It was set when William and his brother, Prince Harry, were children. Their mother, Princess Diana, was killed in a car crash when photographers were chasing her car in Paris. Reporters respect the family's privacy in exchange for arranged meetings on special days. The images published Monday show William and his wife, Kate, with 2-year-old George and 10-month-old Charlotte enjoying the snow last week. Officials say it was their first holiday as a family of four and the first time either of the children had played in the snow. Two pictures show William and Kate at play in a snowball fight. The policy with the press meant the boys could have a relatively normal childhood. Kate and William have expressed the desire to give the same to their own children. I'm Katie Weaver.
And we'll never be royals. It's a run in our blood.
The broken heart syndrome usually affects people who have received very bad news. But recently, researchers discovered that positive news or events can also lead to death. Anna Mateo tells us more.
Broken heart syndrome is officially called Takotsubo syndrome, or TTS. It involves the sudden weakening of heart muscles. This weakening causes the left ventricle to expand abnormally at the bottom. If you remember from health class, the left ventricle is the chamber of the heart that pushes oxygen-rich blood through the body. The symptoms of Takotsubo syndrome are acute chest pain and shortness of breath. The syndrome can lead to heart attacks and death. Even though Takotsubo syndrome is fairly rare, the scientific community has studied how unexpected emotional shocks can cause a heart attack. These shocks are usually unpleasant, such as the death of a spouse or a violent argument. However, no one had ever investigated whether an extremely happy event could give the same result. Until now. In 2011, a pair of researchers in Switzerland
set up a global registry to track cases of the syndrome. Christian Templin and Yelena Gaudry are both with University Hospital Zurich. 5 years later, their registry involves a network of 25 hospitals spread across 9 countries. They had collected data on 1,750 cases of the Takotsubo syndrome. This number of cases, 1,750, is said to be statistically significant by scientific communities. For the study, Templin and Gaudry led a team of 16 researchers. The team found that emotional shocks caused 485 of those 1,750 cases. And within that group of 485, a total of 20 people could be said to have suffered from happy heart syndrome. In an interview, Gaudry said that the researchers have shown that the causes for TTS are more varied than previously thought. The disease can be caused by positive emotions, too. The events that caused the 20 cases of happy heart syndrome include a birthday party, a wedding, a surprise farewell celebration, a favorite team winning a game, and the birth of a grandchild. However, none of these cases of happy heart syndrome caused death. Gaudry and her team published their findings in the European Heart Journal. So, what is the important takeaway from this study? Emergency room doctors should be aware of the fact that patients with signs of heart attack could be suffering from TTS. And these TTS cases could be caused by either positive or negative experiences. Another interesting takeaway is that TTS affects mostly women. For reasons the researchers do not yet understand, 95% of the patients in both the broken heart and happy heart groups are women. These women are mostly in their mid to late 60s. Gaudry said she and her team still do not know why women are mostly affected by the Takotsubo syndrome. The fact that more women than men are affected by Takotsubo syndrome is even stranger when you consider that heart attacks are more common among men. The researchers suspect that the hormone estrogen may play a part in how the disease operates. Women have much higher levels of estrogen than men. In men, testosterone is the dominant hormone. Happy and sad life events are, of course, very different. Further studies are also needed to figure out if both events share the same pathway in the central nervous system for causing Takotsubo syndrome. Japanese researchers discovered the condition. They named it after a traditional Japanese octopus trap. An enlarged heart suffering from Takotsubo syndrome looks like an octopus trap. I'm Anna Mateo.
France has become the first country to ban supermarkets from throwing away unsold food. Legislators passed the law in February. The law requires supermarkets to donate unsold food to charities and food banks. If supermarkets do not obey the law, they face a $4,000 fine. The new law is part of France's efforts to rethink consumption practices. Each year, France throws away about 7 million tons of food. That is 1/5 of the amount of food bought each year. Along with individual consumers, restaurants and stores add to the food waste. Other European countries are also making efforts to reduce food waste. In Denmark, a new waste supermarket has opened, where customers can buy surplus or leftover food for cheaper prices. Arash Derambarsh is a municipal councillor in a Paris suburb. He started a petition for Parliament to adopt the supermarket food waste law. The situation is very simple, he said. On the one hand, we have supermarkets that throw away kilos of unsold food every day. On the other, faced with this absurdity, we have millions of poor people in France. Derambarsh wrote a book called Manifesto Against Waste. In the book, he wrote about his time as a poor student, barely able to pay for rent. I was hungry and ashamed of admitting it, he said. I wanted to turn it into a positive experience, so others would not end up in this situation. Derambarsh is now campaigning for the European Union to adopt similar supermarket waste laws. He is also urging the United States and other countries to adopt such measures too. Yet the reaction among charities and supermarkets in France shows how complex the issue of food waste really is. Some people have welcomed the new law. Louise Saint-Germain is president of a small non-governmental organization called, in English, A Hand Stretched Out for Tomorrow. She said the increase in donations will allow her group to feed more people and provide a more diversified food basket. But others are worried that the law will lead to more donations than they can handle. Aline Chassagnot manages a Salvation Army store. We simply don't have the technical and logistical ability to distribute more food to more people, and we are not the only ones, she said. Chassagnot said France needs to consider larger issues related to consumption and sharing. Yes, there's waste and there are enough poor people around, she said. But really taking into account a person's needs and dignity might mean another way of thinking that's not so simple. Many large supermarkets in France argue that the law doesn't really change much. The director of one Carrefour supermarket in western Paris says her store has been donating unsold food to charities for years. Nothing is wasted, the director said. In the kitchen, chefs put day-old bread products into syrup, then pour almond paste on them, turning them into new desserts. Rotten raspberries are picked out of unsold tubs, and the good ones are reused in tarts. And food that is damaged or past its shelf life is turned into biofuel, the director added. The biofuel helps power supermarket trucks. But other French stores reportedly put bleach onto unsold food. That chemical makes the food inedible.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.